a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go, kids. Episode 295. I know I said that yesterday, but it was actually 294 yesterday. Hey, I was out of it, and I openly admitted that I was out of it. I was sick. Yeah, so here I am back in the saddle. Man, I tell you what, I never got completely sick. It was the weirdest thing. I just fought whatever was trying to get me for like 4 days, and I won, and then I'm back. And it's just like I have won the war, but I am weary from the battle. I won the battle, but I'm weary from the fight. Man, I was just running on about three cylinders for 4 or 5 days. I was obviously getting sick. There was obviously something going down, but it never really emerged into like full on, like, you know, I mean, I had a headache and I had, you know, sinuses and stuff like that, but I had the decreased energy, but I never really got over into like the cough or the aches or anything. It wasn't the flu thing. I don't know what it was, but it was just like somebody just zapped me in a video game and just made me running on 40%. So I'm slower and easier to kill or something. I mean, it was brutal, but I'm back in the saddle and already been pulling shots this morning. I'm at about 75%, 70%. Okay, maybe 65. Depends on where I normally am. I think I normally run at about 80, so that would mean I'm at about 55, 60. But I talked about that yesterday. I think we're all sick most of the time. I think I'm sick most of the time for sure. It's sick in the sense of not well. Yeah, back in the saddle. Hey, I'm broadcasting to you from, I am recording in a bunker underneath a center of the new evangelization, nestled somewhere in the Rockies, not unlike NORAD. But I'm in the new booth, the new second recording studio that the Augustine Institute has ever so graciously let me use. Yeah, so this is the old room I used to record in, where they kind of had this ad hoc, and it is still kind of an ad hoc kind of, but they really did a better job this time. They put up a real cubicle kind of thing. They put foam on the wall. There's like all the gear that I use for my show is kind of already here. So I'm not sure what it's going to take, but I might be able to just, I might not even have to drag equipment back and forth anymore, which is kind of fun. Yeah, this is like, except for when I'm in the pro booth upstairs, this is like the most professional setup I've ever had for recording. This is what I should do with my, this is great. This is exactly what I should do with my office. I should put this kind of like foam stuff. There's like the little different foam stuff on the wall and a little light, and they padded the table and they got like some heavily blanketed walls. I mean, I could do this in my house. I could easily make my little office into a recording booth like this. I've been inspired. They've inspired me. I'm going to see about making this happen. I think I want to, because I care. I want you to get high quality audio sound when you listen to The Counterposition. Because Lord knows it's not high quality in any other way. That's not true. The people who love my show, which is saying absolutely nothing, but, all right. So here we are back in the saddle. Oh man. You know, I tell you what, I've been on this kind of rant here lately about, I've been on this rant about, you know, cell phones and everyone being hyper-connected all the time, because I'm reading all this material about this. I'm reading these articles about, because I'm about to pull the trigger on building a prototype, Which, speaking of, seems like Santa Cruz is back on. We have the official approval. We are officially for real this time fundraising for Shrine Coffee. It, depending on how much money we raise, it may be a slightly less audacious event, you know, project than it was before. It is going to have a lot of the beautiful reclaimed wood from those old cypress trees that we have. There's already being milled and worked on. We will definitely have beautiful coffee, good equipment. Whether it's going to be quite as audacious as it was before, question, but we are officially fundraising. So, something is going to happen. Done. It's done after all this drama. So, go to shrinecoffee.com. Give some money to the project. Throw some cash at Shrine Coffee. And we will build something beautiful and you can come have a coffee. So, I tell you what. Give some money to Shrine Coffee. And, you know, maybe I'll see you there because I'm going to go out and I'm going to get this thing launched out. And it's going to be amazing. So I would love, you can give some money and then come see what your money did. Shrinecoffee.com. So anyway, so I've been thinking about doing a prototype in Denver, and I'm strongly considering making the norm for Calyx prototypes that there's no Wi-Fi, no screens allowed, no headphones, maybe not to-go cups. I want to bring back the cafe as a place of community. And it's funny, I went to... Yesterday, I took off work yesterday because I felt like I was on the downhill slide. I kind of rebounded. I woke up feeling a little better than I had before the day before instead of worse. But I went ahead and stayed off because I didn't know if I was contagious still or not. I wasn't really sure if I ever had a virus or anything. I just felt really rough. But anyway, just to be safe, when I work in food service and when I, you know, there's different, if I worked in an office, you know what, I would power through, get the Purell and just make it happen. But when you're dealing with other people's food, it's just a whole different ballgame. Other people's drink. So I took the day off. I needed a day off anyway. So I went to confession and then I went over to, I had some reading to do. And so I went and I hunkered down in the corner of Thump and sat on the, on a couch and drank refills and read on the restoration of Christian culture for a while. And I was just shocked. It's become so obvious to me now. It's like the place is just like bone silent and there's almost no one talking and everyone at sitting in the main part of the coffee house is all on their laptops and they all have headphones on. And it just, since I started thinking about this and reading about this, I've just been remembering, you know, going to Lakota Coffee in the mid-90s and hanging out with Trent Doherty and Kevin Clay and Jeff Galbraith and all those guys in Columbia, Brett Foster, may he rest in peace, or Pro Nobis Brett. And you know, and when I would go over to Carbondale when I lived in Cape and go to the Long Branch and all these 90s coffee houses that I used to hang out in, going to St. Louis, places, you know, just, it would be feverish places where I would even look back at some of my writings from the 90s, putting out this vision of this thing that we now call Calyx that I wanted to build. And it was always like, you know, the murmur of constant conversation with the whir of machines in the background would be the description of the setting. It was a feverish conversation driven, because that's every coffee house I'd ever walk in. Starbucks used to be like that. Now they're bone silent because they're cubicles, you know? And so I was sitting there, I was distracted by it. I was distracted by the lack of distraction while I was reading. And then I got home and, you know, made some food and I made chicken. I finished up my chicken stock yesterday and made my chicken soup. And I was just trying to, and I got back to the house and between sitting down on the back porch. So I sat down on the back porch, started reading. My neighbor comes out, one sided conversation. She's on a cell phone. One of my roommates comes home. Oh, first thing that happened, I went to go to the front porch, roommate's home on the phone, comes home on the phone. Go to the back porch. Neighbor comes out. She's on the phone. Other roommate comes home walking by on the phone. I go to the front porch finally. Sit down. People walking by on the phone. Just like phone. The guy gets out of his car on the phone. It's like from the time I sat down at my own house to try to read a book to the time I finished trying to read, I think I counted it was 9 one-sided conversations that I was interrupted by. We didn't used to, as a society, exist on the phone or with our headphones on. Anyway, there's my daily rant about this. It's amazing to me that, and then the more I think about this, the more I'm going back and picturing what my life used to be like. I used to check my email when I went to the library. I mean, it's like the email was not something that I checked, you know, every 5-10 minutes. I mean, I'm constantly pulling my phone and checking email. And it's like, I don't have that kind of world. I mean, things that blow up in my world, my staff has been instructed. I run on do not disturb. So your phone call will get through. So don't call me unless something is blown up. And unless something blows up, text me. And I'll see it when I see it, right? So the something blew up can get to me, but still I'm just constantly looking. I'm telling you, I feel like Neo, who's in the Matrix, but has started to realize that there's something off and he's in the Matrix. He doesn't know what the Matrix is yet. He doesn't understand what it is, but he knows there's something off about the way everyone's living. That's how I feel right now. Anyway, all right, well, let's go to the break. When we get back, I'm going to try to shut up about cell phones and whatnot. You're listening to The Counter Position.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See, only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. Man, I am your humble host today. I've been humbled. I'm your beat host. I'm your knocked down host. I'm not humble, but I've been humbled this week, man. I'm so tired. Oh man, I'm still out of it. So I'm gonna be ranty and random. That should be the R squared, ranty and random. That should be the name of the show. I was going to do a rebrand at one point, wasn't I? I had this whole idea about a rebrand and it never happened. Most of my ideas never happened. So anyway, where do we want to go with this? Okay. So I noticed something online the other day and it just kind of just, this is a theme and I want to just, I've talked about this before, but I want to dive into it a little bit again, because now this is coming from a different perspective. So there was an article about scientists. Now, I don't know. This was in one of those like British tabloid things like the Daily Mail or something. I don't know. So I can never know how true this is, but there's a couple of scientists and I think they're like in Kazakhstan or something like that, which is like, okay, great, Kazakhstan. I mean, Kazakhstan's not exactly like Borat, but it's also not France or something. But the point being is that a couple of scientists somewhere working at a university have posited that, and I've heard this before too, that they posited that there's evidence that aliens seeded life onto planet Earth. And okay, so they're the ancient aliens, all that stuff, that's been a thing, right? People have kind of been making that weird claim, you know, Egyptian hieroglyphics and pictures of things that look like spaceships or whatever, fine. Here's why the fact that, people have been making kind of kooky claims like that for a long time. The reason this is interesting to me is because they said that they, because our DNA is so ordered. It's our DNA has really explicit mathematically expressed order in it. So it shows signs of being designed. Therefore, little gray alien seeded life on planet Earth. It's like, do you see where I'm going with this? It's like, so you see order and you go, oh, there's order, like at the core of our existence, at the core of what defines us. There's this order, and it's even mathematically expressible. There's order. And if there's order, there must be an orderer, right? It looks designed, there must be a designer. Yes, you got it, right? So now, yeah, aliens. What? Okay. So we're just having these blinding flashes of the obvious, and teleology is showing up, right? And so the things that have classically been arguments for the existence of God, no one considers God a possibility anymore. So when you see the order that we've been trying to ignore, and our tools have gotten good enough that we're finding order that we can't ignore. So now we've had to learn to go, oh, well, I ain't saying it was aliens, but it was probably aliens. I'm just amazed by that. It's like, I got a crazy idea. How about it's designed? Because there's a designer. How about all of life is designed? What's so special about the human DNA? Bird DNA is really, really ordered too. And so is snail DNA. And so is all kinds of DNA. And so is like our planet being just the right. Well, so is the distance from the sun. And so is the universal gravitational constant. All these different. So are the laws of thermodynamics and entropy. And it's like, I mean, come on, man. It's like we've gotten to where we cannot ignore the order that we're finding. So we have to make an excuse for where this order came from other than where it came from, which I'm just like, you know what? I quit. I'm done. I'm done. It's just like, I mean, and you see this, I saw it not too long ago. Remember I was talking about Elon Musk saying that there's like a 1 in 1 billion chance, or 7 in 1 billion chance that we're in base reality right now. He thinks we're living in a simulation, right? So every time they find, well, look, nature seems to act toward with predictable laws, and there's all this order we found clearly is designed. Therefore, we're living in a simulation. Pretty soon the debate is not going to be, it was the aliens. We're in a simulation. No, it was the aliens. We're in a simulation. You're just going to be throwing all this order at each other. These arguing about the nature of the order back and forth. All this order that from Aristotle on has been an argument for the existence of God. But we can't accept the idea that there's a God. We can't accept that there might be some kind of physical evidence. There might be some kind of philosophical kind of induction or from the existence around us that would dip. Why? Because it would make a moral claim on us. Now, I don't know that it absolutely has to. There's a great question. Does the existence of God happen? Does that automatically, without any kind of revelation, without any kind of does that put a moral? But we think that way because we think of God, we think of religion, we think of morality because everybody thinks that religion means don't. And that's, you know, hey, tell me one word, describe Catholicism, don't. That's what people think it is. It's about being good, and the secret to being good is don't. And so because of that, you cannot possibly posit deity as the source of any of this, because that would then somehow kind of be a big cosmic buzzkill. It would just rain on our little hedonistic parade that we don't like to be limited in any way. So I saw an argument not too long ago that the fact that you see this theme showing up, this repeated theme of like events down towards the end, and then there's a switcheroo, like Steve Harvey messed up the beauty contest winner, and then that same thing happened with the Oscars right after the Patriots kind of pulled out the Super Bowl at the last minute. They're positing that the reason that's showing up all the time is because we're in a simulation and they've just released like a new mod or something. That's like a new modification. It's a new version. It's like this new thing that everybody, the people who are running the simulation, are having fun playing with, is the new switcheroo by Base Reality M. Night Shyamalan or something. You know, it's like, I'm done. Just like, I'm done trying at this point. So while I'm sitting on the front porch, guy next door that got out on the phone came back, and I've seen this kid walking by a couple times. He seems like a nice guy. I've heard him talking about Shakespeare with a friend one day, and he says, hey, do you mind if I ask what you're reading? Because I'm sitting on the front porch reading. And I'm like, that's the kind of interruption I want when I'm on the front porch, is some random young dude to go, hey, what are you reading? That's what I'm hoping for, not listening to your phone conversation. And so sure enough, I was reading Restoration of Christian Culture. And so we started talking, and he asked some really good questions about what that was about and if I agreed with it. And I said, well, in a way I do, but some of the traditionalism, what do you not agree with? You know, and he was asking really good questions. You tell he's fairly well educated. And so we had a beautiful conversation, and we were actually talking about this, about order and about whether or not reality is ergonomic to human consciousness, and why is it ergonomic to human consciousness? And why can we understand what we see? Why do we expect to understand what we see? Why do we trust that we understand what we see? It's pretty interesting. It's funny that, but we were just talking about how like it seems like that this idea, some of these ideas that they're finding, they're thinking they're just like these really, really cutting edge ideas because they're at the micro level or the macro level, and you can describe them with pure mathematics. But this is the stuff that Aristotle was talking about 2,500 years ago. This isn't new. The fact that nature acts for an end, the fact that, you know, if we were walking through the forest and we saw an F-15 just sitting there, it wouldn't occur to anyone that came about just by accident. That's designed. A sparrow is infinitely more complex than an F-15. So why do we think that happened by accident? You know, these are really old arguments, but suddenly they've computerified them, and they've mathematically found a way to mathematically signify this order, and so suddenly now it can be taken seriously. But it gives you serious arguments for a simulation or aliens or anything other than God. I'm just like, all right, there's my modern society is nuts rant for the day. All right, so speaking of Musk, I'm finally going to get to this Elon Musk's brother thing I've been threatening to do for a while. You're listening to The Counterposition. We'll see you on the other side.
How we crave a hanging in his dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your... What am I? What am I? I start to say humble host again. I am your weary host. I am your recovering host. All right, so we were talking about... there's a connector here. Remember Elon Musk? I've talked about him before, who thinks we're living in a simulation. And the reason he thinks we're living in a simulation is because we've gone from Pong to almost unable to be told apart from real life VR. And so if that's the case in the next 20, 30 years, we're clearly going to be able to make a simulation that we would be unable to tell from reality. So if we are going to be able to do that, chances are we already have. And if we already have, we're probably in it. That's his argument. Now, this could be the first go round. The question is, someone somewhere will be living in a simulation and not know it at some point, whether that's us or not. He thinks there's a 1 in a billion chance that we're actually base reality. That this is the first time we figured this out. Remember like in the Matrix when he gets to the end and he finds out that this is like the how many times he's been there and how many times he's lived through this and gotten there, and they show him all the recordings from all the other times he was there. He thinks that we're kind of like in this loop, so to speak, right? The only reason I brought that back up is because Musk said, when first asked about this, Elon Musk, he said that to the point, he says he's so obsessed with this idea to the point that he and his brother made a deal where they cannot talk about this topic when they sit in the hot tub. Because him and his brother like to sit in the hot tub together and talk about big ideas. And they had burned so much time talking about whether or not they're in a simulation that they made a rule that he can't talk about this while they're in the hot tub. So I had always thought that his brother must think like him and they just get all into it. And so they made a rule that they couldn't. But then I can't remember the guy's name. I should look it up. Elon Musk's brother actually lives in Boulder. I live in Denver. He lives right over the hill. And he has a new project. He has a couple of restaurants called The Kitchen. And he's opening these projects called The Kitchen. There's another one. I can't remember what it's called. And he's wanting to open 50 restaurants in the next 2 years. And what they're doing is it is full on local farm to table. They're trying to bring real food, like grown by farmers in an organic, old school, real manner. Without all the sketchiness, without all the Monsanto stuff, without all the genetic modification, real food grown, the real heirloom species and everything grown the way things used to be done, and then sold to people in a healthy way in a restaurant. And he's trying to put 50 of them in the next 2 years. He wants to bring, one thing I love about Elon Musk, I love about this guy, his brother, is they have these big, hairy, audacious goals. His goal is, I want to bring real food. I want to make real food available to everyone. So I heard him on Colorado Matters, which is a local NPR show. And he's in there interviewing Elon Musk's brother. And I can't remember the guy. I'll have to look him up during the break, find out what his name is. And because I thought I had it written down, but I don't. And so he wants to bring real food to everyone. And he said that he thinks that real food is the new opportunity, the way like software and digital, the new digital media was not too long ago. He thinks that this is the cutting edge. He wants to serve real food in real places with real people. And I'm like, wow, imagine that. And so obviously, if you listen to this show, you know that I'm like, yes, let's do this. You know, this is like, this is the thing that I'm obsessed with, is real food, real analog spaces, real conversation, real interactions, real actual human scale, human pace living. And it's become increasingly my obsession here lately. So I wonder, based on what he's doing. So one of the brothers is trying to get us off the planet to Mars and is convinced we live in a simulation. I think I found out, I think I see now why Elon's not allowed to talk about this in the hot tub, because I think that this is just not how the other brother thinks. He thinks that he wants to bring real food and real spaces to real people. So that's interesting. So I got to thinking about this, listening to him talk about this. It's pretty fascinating what they're doing. This is ingenious, really. What they do is they have a couple places where they have their own gardens and their own farms. They don't want to do that. This is not, it's not scalable, and they don't want to do that. So what they do is they go into a place. Let's say that they went to Des Moines, Iowa. They would go to a bunch of these corn farmers and all these people that have all this farmland, and they would get them to take, you know, 50 acres out of a, you know, 10,000 acres or whatever, you know, 50 to 100 acres or something, pull all that nasty corn out, fix the soil, and then grow real food in a real manner. And they would tell them, here's what we need you to grow. Here's how it needs to be done. Here's what we want. Here's what we'll pay for it. And they cut deals with these farmers and they get them to carve out. They're literally taking back sections of these big factory farms by partnering with local farmers that are just cranking out a ton of crap corn that can only be used for ethanol or something, and just getting them to take some of their land back and plant it with real food again, and they contract with them. That is ingenious. That is ingenious, and it's amazing. And I'm a giant fan. So if you see The Kitchen or any of these projects by Elon Musk's brother, I think there's one in Memphis right now. I'm going to go check out the one in Boulder, and I'll have at least a segment. I would love to get that guy on the show, but I mean, I don't know that I'm big enough or I haven't. You're very lovely people, but there's not a ton of you. And so we got to get this thing a little bigger before I can get away with doing something quite like that. But I think that would be interesting. I want to go see what that's about. So, but that just got me thinking about what he's trying to do with food and where the food comes from, I'm trying to do with coffee and with beverage, but definitely trying to be very cognizant of where the coffee is sourced and how it's sourced, and being very cognizant of how that affects people in origin and families, and trying to source my coffee very much within the confines of Catholic social doctrine. And because I think it's just the deepest understanding of the supply chain and economics and the human person and how those all relate. But what I'm really trying to do, what he's trying to do with just letting people interface with real food, I love the idea of creating spaces where you can have a real moment. Just imagine if you just walked into a space and everyone was present. No one was on their cell phones. No one was barred off from the world with headphones. No one, there were no screens at all. I've gone on this rant before, but think about this. I've been in coffee houses. I have ran coffee houses myself. I ran the Gray's Cafe in 1999. And in 1999, there would be a cafe slammed with people and there were no screens in the place. This is before everyone had cell phones all the time. I didn't get my first cell phone until 2001, I think. Yeah, it was 2001 when I had my first cell. This was before cell phones were just like ubiquitous, right? Picture if you just walked into a space and everyone was present. Everyone was doing what they were doing with who they were doing it with. They were having conversation. They were there in the moment. And you walked into that space and you heard that din and you felt that feeling in the air of people being there. I tried to throw some metaphors at it. I was thinking it'd be like these places, these moments when you stepped into them, it would be like when you walk into a room, like up in the mountains, they have places where you can go get oxygen. Like you put on some oxygen, all of a sudden you're getting full oxygen when you've been kind of oxygen starved, you know, or when you've been driving, picture like you've been in an airplane for a long time and you're in that reality where everyone's just kind of doing their airplane thing and you're all cramped and the air is stale. And then all of a sudden I remember I used to fly into Santa Barbara. I've talked about this before. And you get out of the airplane and instead of being just like landing in like the middle of LAX, which isn't too much different, except you could stretch than being in an airplane because it's so inside and recycled and everything. But I used to fly into Santa Barbara and you would get out of the plane, or I can remember getting out of the plane, like in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, whenever I would fly in, you get down and you literally walk down the little stairs outside. You did that in Santa Barbara sometimes, depending on the size of the plane. You would literally deplane into fresh air. And that going from that internal and false and stale and recycled to this ocean and flower smell in the air. I think it would be like that. So, all right, we're running out of time. Let's go with the break. When we get back, I got more up my sleeve. You're listening to The Counter Position.
Then all the color glass that painter's palettes mash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to see. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your beaten but not down host. I'm going to have to come up. I need to like come up with, before I start each show, I need to come up with three adjectives. But I kind of like them to be on the fly, you know? I like them to be on the fly. So we were talking about these moments of real space, these moments of real food, of real presence, of real conversation. And I was trying to throw some metaphors at it, like what I want this to be like, the way I think that it would feel if we could just create these places. And then I want to take this a whole nother level. I want to go someplace else with it. But I said it'd be like if you were in the mountains and you're starved of oxygen because of the altitude, and then you went to one of those oxygen bars and you plugged in and you got like some real pure oxygen. You're like, oh man, you'd feel there and alive. You know, if you've been in an airplane, you fly into Santa Barbara, you get out, you deplane, and you go from recycled stale air cramped to like you're stretching, there's sunlight on your skin, there's a smell of the ocean. Flowers, it's just like, ah, there it is, you know, like when you've been in a car for a long time, even just picture that. I'm about to drive out to Kansas and back for a conference. You know, when I'm out there in western Kansas and I've just been driving forever in a day, just driving, and you see, oh, there's the rest stop or there's the truck stop, and you get out of the car and you stretch and there's like, oh, it's like real air. You could feel wind on your face and you're out there and there's people and you're not crammed in a car anymore. It's like, I just feel like it would be that kind of thing. It'd be like, you know, when you get, you know, that feeling when you drive out to the mountains, you go out into the woods or something. And that moment you notice, oh God, I don't have a signal. And then the nomophobia kicks in, the no mobile phobia. You have no mobile. I am out of cell range. I am out of range. I have no signal. And you panic for a little bit. And then you go from, oh God, I've got no signal, to, oh God, I have no signal. Yes. Yeah, it's like, there's that. I just think that it's kind of like, you, it's kind of like when you, it's like we're all existing in the Matrix, you know? I mean, I'm going back to Musk in this. Maybe we are all in the Matrix. But what if the Matrix is actually of our own making? Maybe this is the first go around. And the Matrix that we're in is this weird connection of all these devices and all these things pulling us 15 different ways, and this weird need to read everything that everyone writes every day and then tweet about it, put it on Facebook, see what everyone else is reading and what everyone else said. Make sure that you get a picture of everything you eat and get it out on Instagram or Twitter, and just that weird kind of like always on thing. Maybe that's the Matrix. Maybe it'd just be like, so picture you're like in the Matrix and it's all crazy and it's all just like fake, and you could just kind of like, they pull that plug out of the back of your head and you're like, you're back in reality. Except this reality isn't desolate. You're not stuck on some ship. It's not like in the movie. It's like, picture if it was just like crazy and they pull the plug and you're like next to a lake. That's how I think it would be if we would just create these spaces. Now, where are we going to go with this? Because I'm going to set it up. Now I'm going to knock it down. What if, this isn't on my outline, this just occurred to me based on what was next on my outline. So we've got these spaces. We've got restaurants where there's real food and you can get a tomato that tastes like a tomato. I remember the first time I was in California. I mean, I used to get like, you know, big tomatoes out of the garden and stuff, and I knew they were better in Missouri. But the first time I ever went to a farmer's market and bought a bunch of heirloom tomatoes, and I tasted these weird looking different colored tomatoes, I was like, wow, they all taste so different. Oh man. Oh, this is what food tastes like. Oh, okay. You know, if there's places where there was real food, places where there was real conversation, places where people were present, where you were welcome. If there was people living in reality. Now let's think about across all this show so far. What if there are people who are using their intellect and seeing the order in reality and acknowledging where it really came from and had the solidity of not thinking that it was aliens or that it was, we're in some kind of illusion, but they saw clearly that the reason that there's an order in reality, because reality's ordered, because there's an orderer, there's God. If we realize that we are living in reality, we do know and understand what we see because it's built for us to understand and we're built to understand it. And so we had that solidity. And then we had real food and real spaces and real conversation. And we were unplugged from the Matrix and we were really present. And people could walk into that space and they would feel that difference. We would be there for them, with them. We would be there in that presence. We would not be distracted. We would literally be in the moment with them. Now, what if that was our churches? What if that was what people experienced when they walked in the back door into the narthex of your parish? How do you feel when you go to church? Do you feel like you've entered into a place of deeper reality? Do you feel like you've entered a place of deeper solidity? Do the people at church seem more or less present to you? When you go to church, do you feel yourself more or less present? Is this a moment you're in? Are you available to those around you? Are you available to God? I don't know about you. I go to some pretty awesome churches. And still, a lot of times when I walk in, if I walk into a decent sized Roman Catholic parish, even one that I attend most of the time, I'm surrounded by a bunch of people that I don't know, that I have no relationship with. So I'm kind of an Adam. And I see people I have acquaintances with and even a few close friends kind of across the way. Hey, and you kind of smile and nod and you go in, but you're entering this place. And everyone else is kind of in this place, but they're all kind of doing their own thing. And it's just like, it doesn't seem as present. And I don't have the answer to that. Maybe it's us all being more present to God would bring us to be more present to each other. But it seems to me that the place is the easy answer. If anyone's listening who's a traditionalist, would be like, oh, the churches need to be more beautiful. They need to be more traditional. There needs to be more of a reverence for the Eucharist. There needs to be more of a focus on God and not on each other. And so that's why you're noticing that you're not, you don't feel like people are present to you because they're not there for you. Yeah. I get it. We've built this weird dichotomy. So one of the great dichotomies, you know, I talk about one of them all the time, the difference between believing the gospel and acting on it, you know, and you have all these people that are feeding the poor, but they don't really believe in any reason to feed the poor. And you have all these people who believe in the gospel, but don't really do anything about it. And that's kind of like been this weird dichotomy. I think that that's another dichotomy. Being present to God and being present to those around you. You know, when you think about the imitation of Christ, we're always talking, you know, the imitatio Christi, the trying to live like, you know, Christ, the old thing, like people wearing these bracelets, a WWJD, what would Jesus do? I mean, look at what Jesus did. Jesus was always present to those around him. He goes to get a drink of water at the well. The woman comes. He's present to her. He engages her. I don't know what that would look like. I don't know what we would change. I don't know if it has to be a collective change in the hearts of people. But I know, especially when I travel, I walk into a church that I've never been before, and I am invisible. I am absolutely invisible. And I'm hard to miss. I'm a good sized dude. And so some big old dude with some big old beard comes rolling into your church and no one bats an eye. It's no one welcomes you. No one says anything. Maybe tops someone hands you a missal or a songbook when you walk by. That's kind of really going there. But no one acknowledges your existence. It's almost like everyone has made a pact where we're coming, we all show up separately, we're going to sit separately, we're going to stay as far away, we're going to equally space ourselves as much as we possibly can, we're going to all sit as far away from each other as we can, because we're all trying to have our private moment. I think that might be the equivalent of us being on our cell phones or putting our headphones into each other. You know, of course, I'd say 50% of the time, maybe 75-80% of the time, you hear a cell phone go off in Mass. And it's almost always during the consecration too, which makes me think that there's something spiritual going on there. But I don't know. This is something I'm going to start poking on. These real spaces, real food, real restaurants, real places to eat, real spaces, real conversation, real coffee, real moments. What would that look like if it were real churches? How can we be? How can we experience that? That's something I'm going to be hitting on some, I think. All right, so that's what we got today. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counter Position. Thanks for coming out.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.